We're joined on the programme now by Reltan Nilanen, who is talking to us about a horrendous experience that she went through recently, or that's how I would see it anyway. Reltan, good morning to you.
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Okay, right. What happened to you whilst travelling from Dublin Airport to Donegal Airport?
Well, I had a mastectomy. I had breast cancer 15 years ago and a mastectomy. And since then, I've been wearing what I affectionately call my bean mic. It's a prosthesis. And I've never had any problems anywhere going through security at any gates. And I've been through Amsterdam, Glasgow, London, you know, good few places. Mm-hmm. And then just coming up to St. Patrick's Day, I was going up to Garda Cork for a special night for Lilith Lira, who's he's just retired as a professor down in Galway. And I was coming through the gate and I was stopped because what happens now is they have these new big body scanners and you stand in front of them, you put your hands out and it flashes up a big orange triangle. And it goes, danger, danger, Will Robinson, there's something here we need to investigate with me. Most times, and I've been, as I said, I've been through Glasgow, I've been through Heathrow, you get a quick pat down and that's it. Thank you very much, Ben, and away on. But at this particular stage, the security officer stood in front of me and went, what is it? This is showing up. I went, yeah, that's my breast prosthesis. And she went, I have to see it. And I looked at her because we're starting. This was Paddy's weekend. Mm. Come on, the whole world and his mother was there, you know. So I stood there. And to be honest, I think I mentioned on somewhere else, I was like a rabbit in the headlights. Sort of, you are? Mm. And I said, I repeated, it is a breast prosthesis. And she went, I have to see it. So I ended up trying to put my hand down the front of my top and in. And do you know what? You get special brass to put these things in so they don't move all over the world and fall out in the middle of Tesco. I had to hook around to try and get it out because it's awkward.
Yeah.
And halfway through getting that out, I think that's when she suddenly realised, this might not be the best idea.
Mm-hmm.
He says, okay, that's grand. Where you go? So I walk through and again, still going, what just happened? And I was actually sitting into the plane, to be honest, before it really hit me what had happened. And you know yourself, now, I have to say here, there was a bit in one of the national newspapers and went, I was crying on the airplane. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was, but you know how short that airplane is.
Yeah.
You're no sooner up than you're down. That is not the point. And I am not here to be a victim. I'm here to say, really, to be honest, be ready. Be ready to tell them, okay, give me privacy.
Okay, well, and
let's go. Let's do it.
It's,
you know,
your experience, and of course, it's up to you to frame it whichever way you like. But I think there are people listening that will feel you were a victim. I mean, this, dependent on how each individual, I mean, this is really offensive and hurtful and dehumanizing. It's so many different things,
yeah.
Dependent on how the person feels it, obviously. But to have to be,
yeah.
I don't know, how did it make you feel having and the public nature of it as well, and just the, I don't know, how did it make you feel?
It's the public nature of it actually. It was the nature of sort of asking me basically to start hooking around in my underwear in the middle of the airport with all these people running around. And I'm not a victim, but I was victimized.
Yeah.
And I think she started realizing how humiliating it was, sort of as she started to see the prosthesis start to come out, you know. But I mean, the irony is as well, there were about three or four guys on the gate with her and none of them intervened to say, you know, oh, sorry, maybe this could be handled another way or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I must admit, on the way back through Carrickfinn, there's only, as you know yourself probably, there's one gate, there's one body scanner, and it's this new body scanner. So I said to the guy standing on the other side before I went through, I tell you what, this is going to beep and this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't have been nicer. Yeah. Oh, jeepers. Oh, absolutely. Not a bother. Which is exactly what they were like in Glasgow as well.
And you he treated you like he treated you like a person. You weren't treated like a person.
Oh, yeah.
That was just...
No, I was treated like to be honest, like I was already in the prison system for being a drug mule between Dublin and Donegal.
In terms of, I mean, even if the was it said to you at any point, look, I understand this might be sensitive. We do have an area that I can take you to. Where you can show me, so at least it would be you and one other individual rather than this.
That's what should have happened. Mm. Yes, but woulda, shoulda, coulda. No, that's what should have happened. But I'd just like to say, I mean, I did actually wrote in a complaint on the day, and I got a holding reply of, oh, we're terribly sorry this happened. And they did say, we're terribly sorry this happened. We'll investigate. So I waited, and then they came back with, well, we'd like to repeat, we're terribly sorry this happened. But, and when you see the we'd just like to repeat that for security reasons, blah, de blah, de blah, de blah. But I have since written back to them, and this is where I sort of decided to sort of move it up a notch and bring it out into the public sphere. They did not say, this is explicitly and in clear language what should happen when you go through one of these body scanners. Step one, step two, step three. And I think that's what needs to be done.
A protocol.
In the same way as when we're traveling, you get something coming up on your screen when you're checking in or whenever to say scissors, this, you know, sharp objects, aerosols, whatever. There should be some kind of, in case of prostheses, please note ABC.
And if this,
and I want to see that happen.
Yeah, and I think you're right too, because there has to be a better way. Because if that person who insisted, at least for a time being, for you to remove your prosthesis, it then would have had to have gone in a train through the scanner, because she couldn't have made a visual assessment on that. So if there is no proper policy or no information, presumably you'd have to place that into a tray, go through a scanner and retrieve it. Otherwise, there'd be no point in her seeing it, because she couldn't fully determine actually what it was. And also, too, I think what's so important about you speaking out is that this is almost designed that you don't speak out about it, because not everyone would be comfortable doing so. And there could be 500 individuals that have gone through this separately and not said anything about it because it's so horrendous to them and they don't want to speak publicly.
There are several people, because while I was waiting for the plane, I actually put into a forum for breast cancer survivors.
Okay.
I said, look, this has just happened to me. Has this happened to anyone else? And I did hear not exactly the same thing, but similar things where they were, where women were made to feel uncomfortable and singled out. And that, to be honest, that's not on. I mean, I think I've already said in other places, I'm 15 years down the line. I never think about it at this stage. It's an intrinsic part of my life, and I get on with the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. But to have this brought up like that, if I was 6 months out of surgery, you know, and a lot more of a shrinking violet than I am, I think they would, you know, I don't know, my heart goes out to women who are just still trying to come to terms with the whole thing. And as well as that, are probably still in treatment. They're probably still taking hormone inhibitors and, you know, and they might be in radiotherapy. You never know, you know, yourself. So there are people who are a lot nearer to the original treatment period yes, than me.
Of course.
And this would be happening to them.
And look, that flight, those flights, the cancer flights, obviously, where people from Donegal, yes, get access to cancer services in Dublin. So there is that built-in traffic. And yes, I just wonder, are we going to hear other cases of people feeling embarrassed or humiliated? I don't know. I can't think of an example, but, you know, maybe stoma bags or whatever it might be that people are having to demonstrate publicly there, one thing or another. I don't know exactly what might trigger these scanners, but I'm sure there are other examples, and we can't treat people subhuman. They have to be treated with respect and dignity. And unfortunately, we hear too many stories like this where they're not. And often it is buses, airlines, things like that. Railton, thank you very much for speaking out with us as well, because I think it's really important that everyone hears this, and especially our airports hear it, because there has to be a policy, and you should have, at the very least, if they insist on doing so, they should. The first thing should be, we have a private space for you, or something along those lines. At the very
least. And just a note about the Carrickfinn. I've used Carrickfinn quite a lot in the last few years, and I've never experienced anything except pleasure and joy.
And on that note, thank you very much, Railton. I really do appreciate you speaking to us. If you have any similar experiences or anything along those lines that you feel we should highlight, please let us know. You know the contact details, don't you? 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts. A caller says, I normally don't say this, but I hope she puts in one heck of a claim. And if she hasn't done it, to do so. If she doesn't want to keep it, donate it to charity. What happened there is a bloody disgrace, they say. For people like that with prosthesis, etc., they should have a medical cert that the scanner might go off like a pacemaker. Airport staff do have to be careful, and they would lose their jobs if she was carrying drugs. But listen, it is possible. There has been a case where someone has smuggled something in a prosthesis. I mean, so, but there has to be a process or something that something can't be exploited, but people can't be made feel like that as well. Right, okay. We are going to take a short break, and then we're going to be talking about a special presentation at Century Cinemas Letterkenny. It's on the issue of endometriosis, which, it's great, is being spoken about far more now than it would have been in the past. We're going to be joined by two guests on that after these. Now, on the 29th of April at 7:30 p.m. in Century Cinemas Letterkenny, a powerful documentary on endometriosis called Below the Belt will be screened. And afterwards, there will be a discussion which aims to provide women of all ages in Donegal the knowledge and awareness necessary to navigate a diagnosis of endometriosis. And even maybe we can talk about how you go about getting that diagnosis, can be a challenge in and of itself. Kathleen King's awareness advocate for endometriosis and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having us on.
And we're also joined by Cheryl Jane Rock, who's executive producer of the documentary. Good morning to you, Cheryl Jane. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I'll just make a quick correction. I'm not executive producer. I'm just promoting the film. Thanks, though.
Can I call you executive promoter? At least we'll be half right. It's a very valuable role as well. My apologies. It's just what's written in front of me, Cheryl. Kathleen, how did this come about in terms of, were you approached to sort of help with the source material, or did you seek out someone who might be interested in making a documentary on this important topic?
Yeah, so the director of the documentary is a lady called Shannon Cohen, who also lives with endometriosis, and she has a filmmaking and a law background. She first produced a documentary in 2016 called Endo What, which had its Irish premiere in Letterkenny. And we had a fantastic response to that. And, you know, as, you know, the community in Ireland, like worldwide, we helped crowdfund that. That allowed then Below the Belt to be launched a couple of years back. We held an Irish premiere back in 2022, but it's such a powerful documentary. And while we're hoping to get this to broadcast, it really is so important that people see it. So Cheryl and myself have decided to bring this to Donegal ahead of that. so that people can take the education from it, people can take the impact from it, and, you know, all of the education that comes with that. I would work very closely with Shannon in terms of, you know, awareness and different advocacy events worldwide, but it's such a powerful story, it needs to be told.
And it is told through four people, is that correct?
It is, yeah, for at least four stories within that film, and we see the progression and the impact that it has on these individuals, right through from not being believed, given inappropriate treatments and diagnosis, and also like the financial side of it, having to travel for surgery, all things that we see reflected here in the Irish community.
I've spoken to too many women that have struggled to get the diagnosis, as you've just outlined yourself, to the point where it's all in their head, or it's this or it's that. And the common theme is eventually they just, you know, have to self-advocate. They do their own research and they say, this is what I have. Now you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible. And you know, I suppose 25 years on from my diagnosis, we're still seeing the same fight. I'm still seeing people being faced with the same challenges that I faced. The average delay to diagnosis in Ireland is 9 years. But I've recently spoken to a woman who was first diagnosed in her 50s. And that's not uncommon. You know, I will come across women like that quite frequently. I think, first of all, we don't believe women. We don't believe that their symptoms are quite severe. But equally, we find that women don't necessarily know that something's wrong, because we've been led to believe that maybe, you know, pain around the time of periods, maybe painful sex, painful bowel movements, pain emptying your bladder. We don't necessarily know that these things are abnormal. So we have a huge gap in education. And again, not just in Ireland, but worldwide, that we need to address.
Well, Cheryl Jane, we are making some progress in that more people now than, I think, you know, I don't know how to timeline it, 5 or 10 years ago, understand or have some knowledge of endometriosis and how it can affect people. And I'm not talking about those that have it. I'm on about just general society. And it also talks to, unfortunately, another issue that comes up on this show time and time again, problems with the health system, with healthcare that continually seem to disproportionately affect women.
Yeah, there is so much more work to do, really. I mean, I can only speak, I mean, I'm not a medical professional or an academic. I can only speak from personal experience. And as a patient, I was misdiagnosed even last year. So it took me maybe till late of last year to get diagnosed fully. So the experience of that alone is quite frustrating. And the understanding of endometriosis in Ireland still is that it's a woman's disease, and it's not. It's systemic. It has a systemic fallout. And it's been found in every organ in the body. So to address that, there's research that's just necessary.
Are things catching up, though, in terms of our understanding of it? You know, outdated opinions and what have you. Is the broader public conversation hopefully addressing some of those historical issues?
Well, historically, the name itself, endometriosis, it's very misleading. It means, endo means within, mitra, uterus, and osis, disease. And actually, it doesn't have anything to do with the uterus itself. So that's very confusing for the medical community and the society as well. But we are catching up in terms of having conversations about it. There's a lot of younger people who booked into the film, which I'm very excited to have them as an audience. They're more comfortable talking about their bodies. But yeah, we're getting there, but there's just so much work that needs to be done. I mean, I'm somebody now who's been diagnosed late, and that's not a comfortable experience.
No, and there are consequences for that as well. I think it's almost half of infertility cases are due to endometriosis. So I was going to say it's not just the, and thank God I corrected myself, but, you know, some of the things we, you know, about the frustration of diagnosis, the pain, that not being believed, the late diagnosis have really quite serious ramifications, life-changing ramifications for people.
Absolutely. And a lot of that's a very personal story as well. And I think what's a really important message for women is to listen to other women as well, because it's kind of like what Kathleen was saying, that we don't know, when we're told, like we're telling each other, oh, I have that, that's normal, then we're kind of normalizing what's essentially pathology. So it's very important that women are having conversations with each other, believing each other, and promoting women's health as well.
What needs to change, though, going forward, Kathleen? Because, you know, documentaries like this are incredibly important, and we can talk about awareness all day, and we can talk about how we hope things might change. But fundamentally, and I suppose it's in the health system, and maybe it starts at the GP practice, what needs to change? Is it an understanding of what age this can affect people? Is it making sure that people are correctly signposted to either identify or rule out endometriosis? Because I don't want to spend the next 10, 20, 15 years talking about how we're talking about it. How are we going to sort it out?
Yeah, it comes from a multifaceted approach, really, the best way to change this. And we're starting off with education in schools. I launched a pilot program in Donegal called Misha, which is going to help educate the younger generation to recognise the symptoms. The second prong on that then is healthcare professional and public education. And it's very important to think that when you go to a GP with symptoms as vague as maybe fatigue and pain on urination, or, you know, pain around the time of menstruation, it can be very difficult for a GP to recognise those symptoms. So we need to train the GPs and healthcare professionals to look for the red flags. So look for things like painful sex, look for things, pain where the person is unable to attend something as important as a family wedding or an exam or something like that. There are things that you can help to differentiate. And then third of all, we look at the government's plan where they have put in an endometriosis framework last year. Now, unfortunately, there was not enough patient consultation in this. And the regional and super regional centres that have been set up, unfortunately, have left out the west and northwest area. So there's a lot of work to do in that. And we still don't have the expertise in Ireland, you know, to be able to provide multidisciplinary care, excision surgeon, and to cope with the amount of women. We're talking about 200,000 women in this country living with endometriosis in all its shapes and forms. So we've a lot to do.
Yeah, it's estimated one in nine women are affected. There's going to be a level of underreporting here and a lag, I suppose, in counting people, given the decades it can take, or the decades, sorry, almost it can take for a full diagnosis. We can presume, is it, that it's a greater figure than one in nine?
Yeah, if you look at some populations, and particularly those presenting with infertility, it can be as low as one in five. Like, I think we need a non-invasive diagnostic method to be able to diagnose endometriosis quicker. And I'm delighted to say there are some research going on that, including some Irish research, which is going to contribute to reducing the delay from 9 years, hopefully down to 3 months. We're a few years off that device going to market, but again, too, that would be a revolutionary change and get people that diagnosis and treatment earlier.
Mm. And Cheryl Jane, this isn't just about endometriosis, is it? I mean, this is, you know, I think every woman affected or not, and when I say every woman, I mean everyone actually, because it affects all of us one way or other. That this is about actually more broadly to a conversation about healthcare for all women.
I believe that definitely, yeah. I think, you know, we can all say is, you know, healthcare, it's not, you can't say women are more important than men. Of course not, but biologically we have time frame. That's just science. Mm. And I think it's important that we do prioritize women's healthcare. And essentially it's, you know, we're there to reproduce, hopefully.
Yeah. Okay. So the showing of this documentary is on Monday, the 29th of April. It's at 7:30 p.m. It's in Century Cinema, Letterkenny. How do people go about sort of getting their tickets? And talk to me a little bit then about the post-show conversation. Cheryl, Jane.
So you can, we have a link on Ticketailer. I'll have to admit the tickets are flying out. That shows the appetite for the conversation itself. So they can contact me on Instagram as well, Cheryl Rock, but Ticketailer should lead them directly to the link. And in terms of the post-show discussion, we just want to start the curiosity of women, with women, and also to start, you know, to encourage self-advocacy. It was the first thing someone's told me whenever I was diagnosed. They said, you know, you need to self-advocate. And I was like, what does that mean? What is that? And you feel like you're being pushy, that you feel like, you know, you're asking a bit too much. You feel like a hypochondriac. But then whenever the facts show, you realize then, and you kind of have to look back at maybe 20 years of being misdiagnosed, and that's a difficult experience.
Yeah. Kathleen, a caller says her daughter has been referred for hysterectomy. They think she has endometriosis. She's passing out with pain. Is there any other test she can get done for a diagnosis? What a horrendous situation to be in.
Yeah. It is. It's a bad situation. Unfortunately, a laparoscopy is the only way to diagnose endometriosis, but I would advise that caller to seek a second opinion. A hysterectomy is not a treatment for endometriosis. It doesn't remove the disease. And the disease, by its very nature, is outside of the uterus and usually on the pelvic organs. So again, try and seek somebody who has experience with endometriosis and, you know, maybe speak to somebody within the community as well who could help signpost.
Can I just correct myself here? I just, I've read hysterectomy so often. It's a histo, hysteroscopy. I beg your pardon.
Hysteroscopy. Hysteroscopy. Okay. Yeah, hysteroscopy cannot diagnose endometriosis. A hysteroscopy looks inside the uterus itself. It looks at the endometrial lining, which again is different.
All right. Okay. Sorry about that.
Well, Zach Craig, it's also important to state that very often hysterectomy is,
So it was a Freudian slip, but it was not a million miles out either, sadly.
Not a million miles away.
Yeah. With endometriosis, do you have rapid weight loss typically?
I wish.
if somebody's experiencing symptoms such as nausea or bowel discomfort, it may mean that they have, you know, they're not eating as well or eating less. But typically the disease is not associated with either weight loss or weight gain. But normally the symptoms around that, so maybe the bowel symptoms or the, you know, the eating patterns from living with pain can affect that.
Okay. Listen, both of you, thank you very much indeed. I really do appreciate you coming on. Unless there's anything either of you feel we need to add just whilst we're in this space, or are you happy enough?
Yeah, no, thank you very much for helping us promote this. And again, if people have questions, they can reach out to either myself or Cheryl on Instagram. It's the easiest place to find us.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Kathleen King, Awareness Advocate for Endometriosis. It's good having you on the show. And also Cheryl Jane Rock, who is a promoter for this event, which is on the 29th of April at 7:30 p.m. in the Century Cinema Letterkenny. It's Float for Below the Belt, a powerful documentary on endometriosis. Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Cheryl Jane Rock there. 086 60 25,000 is your WhatsApp and text number if you want any further comments on that. Obviously, I mean, maybe I'm out of touch here, but a lot's been happening yesterday and today politically. For me, maybe I should give it more importance than I am. We're going to talk about it tomorrow, of course. But just to keep you updated for those who are really into the politics, what it seems to be now the case, this is informed speculation, i.e. leaks and what have you. It hasn't been formally confirmed, but Helen McEntee is expected to stay in justice. Peter Burke has been widely speculated to be moved up to Enterprise. That seems likely to happen. Hildegard Nocton to remain to go to higher education, Patrick O'Donovan to be chief whip. As I say, that is not confirmed, but that's broadly expected to be the case. Opposition TDs, by the way, whilst we've been on air, have called a vote on the scheduling of today's business. They're unhappy that the government is transitioning jobs internally rather than calling a general election outright. So that means the schedule for the rest of the day will be pushed back, as they were discussing that side of things. Child-to-parent violence is often described as the secret side of domestic abuse because parents who experience it struggle so much to talk about it or even admit that it is happening. Aileen Hickey is CEO of Parentline and is with me on the programme now, with us, in fact. Aileen, thanks for your time today and good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Right, so in terms of contacts to Parentline, are we seeing any trend in the reporting of child-to-parent violence?
We're seeing very significant trends. So first of all, I suppose rather than calling child-to-parent violence or adolescent to parent violence, as it often is termed as well, rather than calling it the secret side, it's often more so the unspoken side of domestic violence or domestic abuse. Because I think most people, when they think of domestic violence or domestic abuse, think of it very much in a partner-to-partner setting. But obviously domestic violence or domestic abuse is any sort of abuse or violence that takes place in the domestic setting. So child-to-parent violence or adolescent-to-parent violence very much falls within that category. So over the last 4 years, we've seen about a 500% increase in, first of all, in the demand for the supports that we have for child-to-parent violence. Last year, we took 6,147 calls last year to Parentline, which made 2023 a record year for Parentline in the first place. But one in three of those calls referred to elements of child-to-parent violence. Now, I will say, Greg, I think, you know, because of the word violence, a lot of people, when they think of any sort of domestic violence or when they think of child-to-parent violence, might think, you know, that it's some kind of 15-year-old young fella kind of throwing his mother up against the fridge door every night of the week. And it can be. but it's not always. Mm-hmm. So we would have calls from parents who can have very significant injuries and are very traumatized, and they may have bruising or a broken bone or whatever. But it isn't just physical violence. As I say, it can be, but it isn't just physical violence. It's also verbal abuse, emotional abuse, damage to property, coercive behaviors, controlling behaviors. So there's a number of elements to child-to-parent violence. I think the thing that needs to be remembered is that the crux of it is that it is any violence that leaves a parent afraid or in fear of their child in their own home. And that is essentially what child-to-parent violence is. And just, you know, again, not to keep over-talking, but, you know, really, I think what the worst part of child-to-parent violence, and every part of it is bad, is that it definitely leaves a stigma for the parent and a sense of shame and a sense of silence, because it's very difficult for a parent to acknowledge that this sort of behaviour is going on in their own home and with their own child, mm-hmm. because, you know, this is their beautiful child and they never expected, you know, these behaviours to be suddenly directed at them.
It's difficult to acknowledge, but more and more people are. And when you see such a rapid increase, 500% increase in demand over such a short period of time, you have to ask the question, are we seeing more of this? Is it because more people are living at home now or living at home for longer? Is it that people are becoming more aware that ParentLine can offer support in this regard, and it's the, you know, maybe the path of least resistance for them in terms before going to the Gardaí or whatever? I mean, what is your analysis of why we've seen such a rapid increase in a relatively short period of time?
Well, I think you've touched on actually a number of the elements. I think it's a combination of things. So I think certainly, you know, parents are probably more willing to talk about it because we've pushed the envelope, not just ParentLine, but other organisations, in terms of trying to open the door to a discussion on this and to try and to destigmatise it and to, you know, to get parents to open up a bit about it. So we've certainly raised the profile of ParentLine and the awareness of child-to-parent violence. But, you know, I mean, look, you can't put everything at the door of COVID, but I think certainly, you know, the first year that we experienced the spike in calls in relation to child-to-parent violence and the spike in demand for the programme that we have to support that was during the first COVID year in 2020. And we saw the demand go out the door at that stage. That would have been because, I suppose, you know, families became kind of hot pots. You know, everyone was living or working from home or going to school from home. And, you know, it certainly was quite incendiary in a lot of environments. There is another thing, which is also that, you know, the housing crisis, I suppose, has also kind of driven a bit of this, because when we talk about child-to-parent violence, it's children primarily aged from 12 or 13, or they can be a bit younger, right through to adult children, you know, because adult children are they're still your child. And now there are so many adult children who, because of the housing crisis and because of financial restrictions, are living in the family home, and it causes a huge difficulty for parents. And actually 17% of our calls last year were from parents in relation to their adult children. So it's a very significant issue as well. As I say, you know, it has been caused by a number of factors, but I suppose most primarily the, you know, the housing crisis and the difficulty of getting accommodation and being able to afford accommodation. So I think it's all that, but I think also maybe parents are a bit more willing to look for support.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it wasn't always there, because it may have increased, but I think maybe it's an increased awareness.
But
as
also,
well,
Aileen, what's happening too when we talk about child to parent abuse is that there are people listening to the show today that maybe think it's normal, maybe just put up and shut up, and they're actually saying, actually, I'm a victim of this. So, you know, the awareness, I think, actually sort of makes people realise that, you know, that's the life they're living, which they shouldn't. What are the, like, if you, someone contacts ParentLine or some other group that offers support in this area, I don't want any trouble for them. You know, I just want a resolution to this. I don't want the guards involved or whatever it might be. And every case is different. Are there interventions or things that you can suggest that can try and address the issues before it is escalated or elevated?
First of all, 100%. And second of all, I suppose what we will always say is, you know, the sooner you ask for help, you know, the better you will feel. And it's okay to ask for help, because, you know, this isn't a behaviour that you need to accept in your own home. So we have a very specific programme called the Nonviolent Resistance Programme. Now, we're not the only organisation that has this programme. A number of other organisations, CAMHS would have it, and TUSA would have it, and Bernard's. There are a number of agencies and organisations would have it. I suppose where ParentLine comes into its own is that we are one of the few, if not the only, organisation that has such an amount of non-violence resistance trained practitioners, because it's a very specific training programme that our volunteers have to do in order to do the programme. We now have 33 volunteers who are trained in this specific programme, and also because the added bonus is that we do it over the phone with parents, so it takes out the logistical difficulties of coming to meet somebody. It also adds to the confidentiality of parents who are looking for the service, because again, you know, they're not always willing to meet somebody face to face or in a group setting or whatever. So then, in short, first of all, I would say that if anyone is dealing with this issue in their own house, the best thing to do would be to go and look at the Parentline website. We've got a huge amount of information on the Parentline website on child to parent violence and on the non-violent resistance programme, and there's testimonials on the website in relation to parents who have been through the programme, and they speak about their experience prior to doing the programme, and a lot of them were in very drastic circumstances and they were very distressed, and a lot of them didn't believe the programme would work for them, but it, you know, they also then describe how they went through the programme and how it worked from the back end for them. Essentially, you know, it's an 8 to 10 week program, so I'm not going to be able to explain it in 3 minutes.
I understand,
but
that,
essentially,
yeah.
it's a non-blaming intervention program. What it essentially does, Greg, is it sets about changing the reaction of the parent to the behaviours that are being exhibited or displayed against them. Because I think most children know exactly what buttons to press and exactly what reaction they're going to get when they press a particular button. And often it's like throwing oil onto a fire. But if you change the parent's reaction or change how the parent engages with that behaviour, that in turn brings about a behavioural change in the child. Now, obviously, it's not as simplistic as that. And unfortunately, for many parents, they would love us to be able to post them a magic bean or to wave our magic wand to resolve what's going on. It doesn't work like that. But for parents who do this programme with us, as I say, on a one-to-one basis over the phone, is a fantastic programme, as long as they commit to doing what's being suggested to them on the programme. Okay. I mean, you know, it changes family dynamics and family outcomes right going forward.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, Aileen, thank you so much for your time. Aileen Hickey, CEO of Parentline. And the website address, Aileen, is parentline.ie, is it? Okay, thank you very much indeed. I'll double check that. We just got cut off there just at the very last. Okay. Again, if that's an issue that affects you or you want to share your story, I know it's very difficult, very sensitive. I did have quite a long back and forward communication on this issue with someone on social media going back some time, and thankfully the situation was resolved, but the person in question in terrible, desperate situation, and there was a violent element to their situation as well. My last communication indicated that they did address the issues and felt safer in their homes. Okay, we'll be back with more after these. I've been told that a lorry and car collided at the Polestar roundabout. It's down to one lane heading out of the town. Of course, traffic now from all areas affected as people are jumping lights, says one listener, and blocking the roundabout. A caller says, as far as I'm aware, security at DAA is privatised. This shouldn't have happened. A room should have been made available for inspection. The security person should have been reprimanded by her supervisors. We got in contact with DAA on this issue to see if they had a spokesperson available, but they don't. And they issued the following statement. We are very sorry that our passenger had a negative experience when travelling through Dublin Airport recently. A full investigation into the incident was carried out by the team and concluded that the situation should have been handled better. All passengers in such situations can request a private screening, which is then facilitated by a trained member of staff. Regrettably, this did not happen on the day in question. We offer a full apology to the passenger and can assure that steps have been taken to ensure a similar situation is avoided in the future, which is encouraging. Now, we can't rely on passengers to know that you can request a private screening, but they do say that they are putting steps in place to ensure a similar situation is avoided into the future. As Ireland's international airport, Dublin Airport welcomes passengers from all walks of life on a daily basis, and we pride ourselves on offering high levels of customer service to all, while also adhering to the extremely strict security requirements that ensure the safety of our passengers and staff. The team will be back in touch with the listener presently, and we look forward to welcoming her back to Dublin Airport soon when we can assure her of a much more positive experience. So it is a response. Let's see. Actions will speak louder than words. Hi, my daughter has to have ambulatory gynaecology. Is this to investigate endometriosis? She's passing out with endometriosis pain. God help her. I'm not, obviously, the ladies that would know that aren't with me at the moment. I disagree with Avril McMonagall when she says salaries for teachers in that space is low. It's actually one of the highest in Europe. And in comparison to our colleagues in Northern Ireland, we're also better off. Northern Ireland get 2 months paid holiday in the summer. We get three. So that's in the early years. That's what one listener says there. I pulled up to a rural self-service petrol pumps and a middle-aged lady approached an elderly lady who was filling up her car. The lady looked very uncomfortable and got into the car and drove off. She didn't approach me as I had my husband in the car. I drove off and this lady was still at the petrol pumps. So I'm not sure if she was looking to extort people or not, but that's one person's experience. So Charlie McConnellogue is to be Niall Blaney's director of elections in his run for a Euro seat. Must be a match made in heaven for Radio Fianna Fáil, which I presume that's what they're calling us. Would it not suit the Inishowen TD better to help his mica-stricken constituents rather than spend his time helping his party colleague in a forlorn attempt to gain a seat in Brussels? Charity begins at home, Charlie. Remember that at the local elections count. Well, it would be the Dáil elections, but I take your point. People driving carelessly on roads have got away for far too long. They'll always get money for fines. There's people going to jail for less crimes. Authorities need to wake up, Mary. The one thing, I mean, there is a catastrophic loss of life on our roads, north and south, by the way. What I don't understand is the approach to it. I'm not, you know, too much policing and all that kind of stuff and extra laws, you know, people have their reservations on that. But why do we target driving safety, like, for a weekend at a time? I mean, that is the biggest suggestion, that the resources are crap, that there could be. So you get one weekend where the speed vans are out, the guards are out, the checking tax insurance, the checking tyres, and it's all done in a big weekend. Surely that should be the case all of the time, because what happens is you say, all right, it's not this weekend, I'll just drive how I like. I don't, but that's how some people might think. So I think the fact that they have to do these, throw the resources at it, and you still don't see many about, if the truth be told, the odd speed van in here and there. I've never been stopped once on a one of these high awareness weekends. But it points to the fact that for the rest of the year, obviously there's a serious gap if that is what a target approach to road safety is. I watched up front with Katie Cannon last night on RD regarding integration. When we go on holidays, we have to show our passport to get on the plane, yet hundreds of people in Dublin or land in Dublin with no documentation. The question is, if 200 people are scanned onto a plane, say in Spain, and 198 are scanned through immigration in Dublin, why can't the two people that have lost their passports en route not be picked out? Well, you see, I think the problem is, some people might not see it as a problem, is that once they get off the plane, they can claim, can they not claim asylum at that point? And then international laws kick in. I was on a flight quite some time ago and they were checking passports as you come off the plane. You know the tunnel that goes between the plane and the... Now, if that were to refuse entry before people actually physically got off the plane, I'm not really quite sure. Coming up on Ours to Protect, it is a Tuesday, so Ours to Protect is on during John's show. Time's running out to get yourself registered for the Climate Action Hero Challenge. Donna Marie Doherty speaks to Hans Zomer, CEO of the Global Action Plan Ireland. So tune in at 12:30 today on Around the Northwest to learn more there. I want to mention, by the way, because just a few short days, the €10,000 home makeover is coming to a conclusion on Friday on John's show. So I'm asking you, have you entered the €10,000 home makeover draw? It's an association with Foy & Company. On Friday, the 12th of April, we'll be calling one lucky winner live around the Northwest. Now, see the calling live? Your ticket will come out and you win. So you can buy your ticket. You don't have to receive a call to win, okay? Your ticket comes out, you win. So what would you do with your 10 grand around your house, inside or out? And not only that, right, we're also giving away €5,000 in cash. So if you want to be involved in that, the most you have to pay for a ticket is €10. One ticket, €10. Six tickets for 50, 10 for 80. It's just a draw, by the way, so you don't have to answer your phone. It's nice if you do, and we can have a chat. Brilliant. But that's not a prerequisite. You can buy your tickets, you're thrown in the draw drum. It's as simple as that. I'll show those watching the draw drum. There it is. Look, full of tickets. Well, it's not full of tickets. You've a really good chance of winning compared to some of the competitions you might enter in terms of the amount that have entered. So if you want to buy a ticket, go on our website, highlandradio.com. It's 10 euro if you have that and you want to have a punt. If you want to buy tickets for other people and yourself, 6 for 50 euro, so they get cheaper, 10 for 80 euro. And the draw's on Friday. Someone's going to win a 10,000 euro makeover package plus 5 grand in cash. It's a draw. So all it has to happen is your number comes out of the draw drum and you've won. Whether you answer the phone or not, that's not part of this at all. Right. That's where we have to leave it on the show. Michaela Clark's around the Northwest. My mistake, she's not. She's just hanging around the studio. John Breslin is around the Northwest. That's coming up after 12. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We will be back with you tomorrow morning from 9.